If I may.
Which I have the dubious distinction of probably being the last person and maybe the person that you're happiest to see up here, but the person you want to finish the most quickly. So I will do the best I can to accommodate. But I do have some information today that you haven't heard yet, and I'll try to focus my comments. We have made binders for everybody. There's been a lot of testimony today, and it kind of covers different categories. So to the extent that people have given us the testimony, we have put it together for binders that Fern will get to you. And there's been a lot of stuff said today, and My name is Alicia Melnick. I'm the Public Policy Counsel for the Maine Civil Liberties Union. We're a public policy nonprofit that works to ensure the civil liberties of Mainers in our state. And I do think it's unfortunate that this hearing has been so adversarial and so contentious. I think ultimately we are all seeking the same goals. In the same way, I know you all have spent a tremendous amount of time thinking about sex offender policy, and particularly things like residency restrictions. And I think we've got the same issue here, which is with sex offender residency restrictions, people are very well intentioned, and it seems to make sense to do that. But when you dig a little bit deeper, you realize that you're actually making the communities less safe and children less safe by imposing things like residency restrictions. And I would just say that I believe the same is the case here, which is that the goals of reducing the overuse of solitary confinement are to improve the safety and the welfare of everyone, including prison guards, prison staff, inmates, and the communities that are welcoming about 95% of these folks back into our communities when they are released. And the research and evidence does show, and we'll get some information to you, that people released from places like the SMU out onto the streets are more likely to recidivate, they're more likely to commit suicide, they're more likely to be violent and aggressive, and they're more likely to exhibit those behaviors whether they are inside or outside the institution. And when they're inside the institution, they make the guards and their peer inmates less safe, and when they're outside of the institution, they make you and I less safe. I was reading some testimony from a father in another state, speaking about these issues in a case, and he said he spoke as a potential future victim in seeking the reduction of use of solitary confinement, particularly for mentally ill prisoners, and for those prisoners for whom it was really necessary to keep them in confinement, that it was really important to have stimulation for them, and potentially beyond things like books, where a large percentage of inmates are functionally illiterate, and some may not speak English as a fluent language. One person up here said, "Don't make our jobs harder." I submit to you, this won't. Don't take our tools away. I submit again to you, this doesn't. This does not prohibit the use of solitary confinement in our prisons. This ensures that things like important and constitutionally required due process and constitutionally required elimination of placement of seriously mentally ill prisoners in solitary confinement is all that we're asking to be done here. And that's really not asking very much. We are saying that what we're asking to be enshrined into law is something that is actually, as you've heard, more restrictive than what was passed down in the consent decree in 1973. So just very briefly, I do want to clarify as well that Maine does practice solitary confinement as we've been discussing it today. That means 23-hour-a-day isolation from others, allowed only a few times per week to shower, make a brief phone call, or exercise alone in a cage. So make no mistake, the information that you've heard about the impact of these practices do apply to what we call segregation SMUs in the state of Maine. That is what, when you read about solitary confinement in the information that you're going to be going over between now and the work session and after that, just make no mistake that what we're talking about is the same thing. solitary confinement, SMUs, SHUs, are all what is defined by the courts as well when they're talking about these issues. One of the things that I think that you haven't heard much about today, and what I'm going to focus on the next couple of minutes and let you go home, is that it's your important duty as elected legislators to uphold and defend the Constitution. And you should support this bill because without proper safeguards, solitary confinement or segregation does violate the Constitution of the United States. Long-term solitary confinement and confinement of prisoners with serious mental illness constitutes cruel and unusual punishment, and it may violate prisoners' due process rights. Placing inmates with serious mental illness in solitary confinement because of the negative effects of isolation has been deemed to be a violation of the Eighth Amendment because it is so likely to cause serious psychological pain and suffering that it is in clear violation of the Constitution. I think this is pretty common sense, and you've heard a lot of substantiation of that today, that isolating an individual who is particularly vulnerable to such conditions by someone with knowledge about the potential for suffering of that individual is inhumane, it's cruel, and unusual. As one judge described it, while conditions of isolation hover on the edge of what is humanly tolerable for those with normal resilience, for seriously mentally ill prisoners, it is the mental equivalent of putting an asthmatic in a place with little or no air to breathe. In fact, every court that has considered this issue has found that holding individuals with serious mental illness or developmental disabilities in extensive solitary confinement with limited social interaction amounts to a violation of the Eighth Amendment. And even if we were to assume that the policies and practices in place, at least the ones that I've seen, which I had to call and request, by the way, I don't believe they're available publicly, are inadequate to address these issues. Part of the policies, in the form that I read them, is that you an inmate could potentially go 90 days without seeing any kind of mental health staff. And considering what we know about the speed with which someone can deteriorate if they have existing mental illnesses or they can develop new serious mental illnesses, we think that that is far too long of a time frame to ensure that people with serious mental illness are not sitting in solitary confinement for 60, 70, 80 days without being identified as such and being removed. And I would say, too, just that we were, before my time, the MCLU was involved in working with the Department of Corrections in developing the Secure Mental Health Unit. And I personally have met and worked with some of the staff and officials at the Department of Corrections and in the prison. And I am, you know, completely convinced that there is a good number of folks in there that are incredibly dedicated to doing good work and implementing good practices, and it is absolutely not their intention to harm people or to violate people's rights. But one of the things that happens is that if legislation comes down from the State House, it's extremely clear what the requirements are, and the resources have to be committed to enforce those laws. It also means that those laws and policies are clearer for inmates and advocates outside of the prison to ensure that if something needs to be done to enforce those rights, that they're able to do so. By requiring weekly mental health evaluations and creating a statutory prohibition on placing the seriously mentally ill prisoners in the SMU, LD 1611 creates the safeguards necessary to ensure the proper treatment of these prisoners and protect their constitutional rights. In terms of due process, the Supreme Court has also held that prisoners held in isolation must be afforded due process in the form of meaningful and periodic review. And there's a growing understanding that placement of inmates in indefinite or permanent solitary confinement, which we don't have permanent here, but we do have indefinite, violates the Constitution even for prisoners without serious mental illness. LD 1611 helps address the risk that segregation units can become a black hole for prisoners by clarifying inmates' constitutional right to due process and a meaningful review of their placement. Meaningful review means just what it sounds. Hearings must not be perfunctory. The process must include things like an opportunity to be heard, consideration of the inmate's behavior, and an evaluation of determination of whether the reasons for confinement remain valid. Furthermore, a Supreme Court in Wilkinson v. Austin held that due process includes a prisoner's right to a statement of reasons why they were being placed or retained in segregation and a statement explaining what they must do to earn their way out. And that is something that one of the parts of the bill that we feel very strongly about, that if inmates don't know why they're in and don't know how to get out, it is essentially indefinite solitary confinement. And we heard earlier that part of what helps POWs survive this sort of thing is this faith that they will be rescued and they will get out. And I think we should afford that same faith to the inmates that we confine, particularly for things like minor disciplinary violations or the accusations of another inmate that are unsubstantiated. In part of my testimony, I just talk again about the fact that this does not prohibit solitary confinement. I think that just needs to be said again because there's been a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding about what this bill does. There's no desire or attempt to eliminate, to remove that tool from the toolbox of corrections or corrections officers. What we think is that in the same way that the restraint chair was reduced to only a necessity, we think the same thing should be done with solitary confinement. We understand that there have been improvements of late, and we really are happy about that. The department shouldn't feel attacked by this legislation. We know fundamentally they agree with many of the goals of this legislation as reflected in their policies and in their statements. They agree with pretty much the fundamental basis, I believe, of what this bill is trying to do. But good intentions and a promise of positive change are not enough. This committee has seen firsthand how changes in leadership affect internal policies and protocols, and in turn impact the lives of Maine's prisoners and corrections staff. The protections that we all believe should be there for the mentally ill or for the due process of others subjected to solitary confinement should not be changeable at the whim of a personnel change. These changes are too important, and these safeguards must be enshrined in law. We do understand change is hard. Supporters of reform must fight against formidable limits to training, staff, and programmatic resources. And in presentations before this committee, OPEGA and the Board of Visitors have noted the serious challenges in trying to change a long-standing and ingrained prison culture. But make no mistake, change is both possible and necessary. Solitary confinement has, over the past few decades, become overused and abused in our nation and in our state. But enshrine transparency and accountability into law. I urge you to pass LB 1611.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions on this bill? Representative Brown.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm very sorry to ask a question at this time of day, but
no one's getting home for dinner anyway at this point, right?
I'd like to ask you, you've heard numerous secondhand anecdotal stories about serious abuse in this SMU. Can you tell me your experience with NCLU? How many of those have resulted in successful
The stories that you've heard related today are new stories to us. I've only been with NCLU for 2 years, but I don't know that we've been involved in representing any prisoners in Maine in terms of lawsuits such as that. So as I said, the stories that you're hearing today were new to us as well. They were stories that came in as a result of Representative Schatz putting in this bill, which we've only been involved with since about December as well.
Some of the most serious crime that I've heard reported on. Would you find that out for us, please? What the statistics are, how many of those have actually been resulted in lawsuits and or convictions against the guards that perpetrated those crimes. Those are some of the most serious crimes that I've heard, and I've heard a lot of crime reported.
So you're asking if we know of...
If any of those allegations have been substantiated in the court of law. They've been given here as testimony, and I think we need to know that.
Yeah, and I apologize. I know that it's probably unusual for you all to hear particularly anonymous testimony. I would just tell you that I've spoken to people that are currently staff and volunteers who wish to remain anonymous as well. I think that's part of why we need transparency. I requested data a month ago about a lot of the information that you've asked us, and I wasn't able to provide data from the institution to Dr. Grassian, who we brought here to testify under his expertise, because we didn't receive any of that data back. So I think we are at a disadvantage in terms of not having, not knowing, not having a crystal ball and being able to see exactly. exactly what's going on. But again, that's part of why some of these things need to be enshrined in law. That's part of why the transparency of having clear due process standards is a step in the right direction in ensuring that if things like have been described here are happening, that they stop, and if they are happening and don't stop, that they are that they're addressed.
Well, I only heard two